you've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Guidepost Podcast. Today is Thursday, August 7th, and we are jumping in for a rapid-ish reaction podcast. We recorded a true rapid reaction podcast yesterday, and the best description of it would be very passionate, maybe a little bit more disorganized than we prefer to be. And I think that was largely due to passion, rage, and what other adjectives and descriptors you like to put on our opinions of what happened yesterday. So yesterday, the ASMSC Striped Bass Management Board met as a part of the annual summer meeting, and there were some really important topics thrown around, discussed, voted on in regards to Draft Addendum 2. So that's a document that's going to come out later this year that striped bass anglers and advocates and business owners and guides and commercial fishermen and everyone in between will be able to get their get a copy, see what the options are, and put in public comment before it goes to vote again with the board. So yesterday got a little bit of crazy, and there were some really important topics. And Tony, I think we'll kick it off with the reality is came back with a lot of options. With regards to the percent reduction that was going to be needed to stay on timeline for rebuilding by 2029. And initially, there were some assumptions made in data that actually ended up being off that said that we were significantly further off the track to rebuilding. So initially, we kind of have this surprise that, okay, things are not going as well as they were posed, which in reality, we did not think they were going that well, but as well as they were posed to us in the past. And that 49% chance of rebuilding was actually a little bit closer to 30%, if I remember correctly. And so we get some percent reductions proposed off the jump, and we're essentially looking at 0, 12, and 18. And the first vote, Tony, just immediately axes 18 off the board to leave 0 and 12. And so before we go any further into sectors participating in that 0 and or 12, what were your initial thoughts about how the tone of the meeting set off and where this fishery is at being closer to 30% than it is 49 by their estimates?
I applaud ASMFC, well, the commissioners on ASMFC to put the 60% reduction in to task the technical committee to take a look at that.
60% chance of rebuilding.
60% chance of rebuilding, yeah, which was a 18%, which is the 18% reduction that you're referring to. I think everything, you know, you knew how it was going to go when it started, because immediately the states that you would expect started questioning MRIP, because it didn't look like we were going to even have to take a reduction. And then, you know, the fish showed up in mass off New York in wave 6, and more fish were harvested than we projected, like twice the amount of fish. They were projecting around, I think, 400,000 and 800,000 were ultimately harvested. And it's funny, like, you know, the typical chuckleheads from, you know, New Jersey and other areas started questioning MRIP, and God love him, you know, Marty from New York was like, no, I was there. I went out on some of those boats and there were a lot of fish. And right off the bat, you know, when they start questioning MRIP and the poor data that we have to go on, and, you know, all this hoo-ha, you know how things are going to go. So the first thing that they wanted to do, because there were, you know, higher than projected landings in New York and Maryland, mostly from the charter boat community as well. I might point that out. It certainly wasn't from the surf anglers in New York. And because of that, you know, we crossed that 10% threshold, and that 60% chance of probability became very unpalatable for a lot of people. And, you know, Cody, I'm going to go off on a tangent. We want this to be real short, but just to give people who didn't have a chance to listen to the meeting an idea of what went on. It was about 5 hours of rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic, because it's my understanding from what I've heard, from what I would call reputable sources, that we're going to have a below average spawn again this year. And, you know, you look at all the time that we're spending to cross that target, you know, as we have to rebuild by 2029. And that's, you know, admirable. And we've supported that from the first day. But, you know, it's kind of like asking if you should change the brakes on your truck when it's on fire. I mean, there's an 800 pound there's a 35,000 pound gorilla in the room. And God love Doug Grout from New Hampshire, because he brought it up. And while this is the 10-year rebuilding timeline, is, you know, we are realist because we actually fish. And yes, we held ASMFC's feet to the fire, and we're not saying that we should turn our back on rebuilding by 2029. You know, we're not saying that at all, nor are we suggesting to lower the reference points, as some ASMFC commissioners, Mike Luisi from Maryland, brought up.
We'll get to that.
What we are saying is, based on the current context, everyone should be really freaked out, because there is no way. And it's not because the target is too high of a number. That's not why. Look, we overfished for 21 to 25 years. We stayed above target for quite some time. A stock of fish can only handle so much pressure. And the answer, if you can't meet water quality standards, is not to lower the water quality standards. It's to do a better job. And if we know 100%, without a doubt, that this stock is going to fall off a cliff, which it is going to do, we're going to have 7 years of vacant year classes. So when you, okay, let me give you a real world example. We can go on to the next. If this young of the year, the seventh year, happens, as we are hearing, the preliminary results look like it is better than last year, but by no means an average year. If that happens and we don't start talking about just across the board coastwide harvest moratorium, I don't know any other species in the world where that wouldn't be up for discussion. You know, if you look at the Albemarle Sound stock of striped bass, they are having recruitment failure as well, and they have a harvest moratorium. Not once did North Carolina talk about these no targeting closures, which we will get into later. And we'll talk about that extensively. But again, it's just, there are some really great commissioners and some really great states on the striped bass management board. The rest of them are a gaggle of buffoons, and they're playing with a multi-billion dollar industry. And it is my opinion that they should not be allowed to manage this fish.
I mean, I think there were different quotes that set the tone for how some of these different people view this resource. I mean, Tony, off the jump, when we heard about taking the 60% probability reductions off the table, one of the quotes was, yeah, you know, 50%. Chance of rebuilding isn't really a coin flip when you think about it. It's like, well, one, that's literally the definition of a coin flip. But moreover, more concerning was that they said anything higher than 50% chance of rebuilding is just really arbitrary anyways. And it's like, what does that mean? What does that mean? How could you possibly? It's actually the pure opposite of arbitrary, which means that it's a higher guarantee or a higher chance of that outcome that can never be 100% guaranteed. And you think that anything less than a 50% chance is somehow less arbitrary, but I digress. And Mike Lewis, he said it at one point. We're going to get to the no targeting stuff in a second, but there was essentially a position threat from Lewis, which was, oh, well, if you think we should take no targeting out of this, well, why don't we just lower the reference points? And then if we lower the reference points for this entire stock and the recreational guys are willing to accept less abundance, that was his own words. If you're willing to accept a lower standard for the shared natural resource that we're all supposed to be protecting and conserving while we utilize, if you're willing to accept a lower standard, then we'll let you fish. And a very strategic positioning there and almost threatening, which is we're going to kill these fish no matter what. And if you think you're going to play with this, then let's lower the reference points, which is ridiculous. And it sets the tone for how he views everything.
Give us what we want now, which is let us keep killing these
endless
fish.
Murder.
Or
endless
we'll murder. Tell you that you can't fish. It's illegal to fish. So let's get into this for a second. So,
well, let's go in order. Let's go in order of the vote proceedings, essentially. And there's some other votes that happened on top of this that would provide further context to, but from the major taking points. And so you have 0% and 12% for reductions in the document going forward. And immediately.
So it's 12%.
Yes. And now the conversation shifts to, well, commercial doesn't want to take part in that. Okay. So there's going to be a 12% reduction. Well, commercial's not taking part in it.
So if you go back 10 years. If you go back to 2015, and this is on the 2023 FMP review, which shouldn't be hard to find on the ASMFC Striped Bass page because it's the only document listed. If you go back to 2015, there's been no reduction in the commercial fishery numbers of fish that they have caught. They have kept. It has bounced around between about 630,000 fish to 584,000, and last year, or 2023, because that was the year the FMP review, it was 600,000. And we know right now that Maryland and New York both had overages in 2024 in the commercial fishery. So they haven't done anything. I don't care what anybody says. I do not care. And I'm talking about the commercial industry as a whole. There are states that have held their feet to the fire, like Massachusetts. And those commercial anglers, every step of the way, have, you know, done. Massachusetts has done what they have done, and they actually, in my opinion, are a shining star of conservation, and they're reasonable and measured. But I digress. So the commercial industry has not taken a reduction in 10 years, and the numbers are right there, like I said, in the 2023 FMP review. And we got the 0% reduction taken off for commercial fisheries, but they're already you can hear the drum beats of, well, they're only 10%. And that means they should only take a 1.2% reduction instead of a 12% reduction. And I want to be crystal clear on this. I sat in 7 hours of technical committee meetings that reviewed the commercial industry and all of the loopholes that they have. And I will tell you right now that there are some states that are facing this and addressing this head on. But here are some of the loopholes. If I'm a commercial fisherman for striped bass on the Potomac River Fisheries Commission, I can fillet the fish and sell them in a roadside stand or the dock or my garage. And that's perfectly legal. There is no dealer permit for finfish or crabs. There's only a dealer permit for oysters. Okay. It's the wild, wild west. If I'm a commercial fisherman in Virginia and a truck from Maryland or New York pulls up, there's no tracking if it's an out of state dealer. Maryland, we've gone into great depths about how they can lie about the weight of the fish. We got a reply from Maryland saying that they did 25 spot checks on and weighed 6,000 fish. It was 2% of the fish. That is not accountability. The commercial fishermen run the check-in station. So look, again, we want to keep this short. Here it is, plain and simple.
If you want to learn more about this topic, go look at our last blog. It says Maryland commercial data, where we go into a deeper dive in all of this.
Yeah. And since that blog, we found out more, and every step of the way is nothing short of horrifying. So again, toxic triad, systematically overfish, systematically underreport, blame it on the environment. That's what you do. Commercials got loopholes I could drive an 18-wheeler through. We're trying to address those. Some states are taking a proactive approach on that. You could probably guess the ones that are doing that and guess the ones that aren't. If the commercial industry does not take the same reductions that we take. Oh, and look, I'll bring this up again. Not once since we found out that NOAA, who, as far as fisheries go, I'm okay with them, weather forecasting and all that kind of stuff. As far as fisheries go, can't get out of their own way. They can't do anything right. They gave a survey with the fisheries effort survey with the questions in a bad order. And because of that, they overestimated our effort by 40%. Not a single person has mentioned that in a meeting.
And to be very clear, every single one of them knows. They are well aware. This is not that they are unaware of this data. It is that they intentionally do not want to bring it up because it completely changes the conversation. We listen to people complain about NOAA data from the jump on this meeting, MRIP data, yet somehow they continue to lean on, well, we're only 10% of harvest, and they share that one singular graph that apparently MRIP is perfect data in their eyes when it comes to the one that thing. So we're living...
Confirms your bullshit. It's perfect.
We're living in a life of confirmation bias where I only want to see data that affirms my position. And if it does not affirm my position, then it must be incorrect. And the reality is you go look at our latest blog about Maryland commercial numbers, that the skew, this 90-10 conversation, is probably more like 37 and might be closer to 40-60 or even higher. And yeah, the reality right. is they don't want to have these conversations because actually realigned data that is going to come soon, when you take this massive chunk off the top of overestimation or rec harvest, commercial is a massive player. And as you reference, it's been at what, 600,000 for the last 10 years. Like there's been no change in commercial while recs continually bear the brunt of changes. And at one point, I can't remember which commissioner, it was from the south half of the coast, I can guarantee you that much. One of the commissioners basically said that, oh, every fish we're not allowed to kill is a dollar taken out of a pocket. And
it's lost revenue. That was our friend John Clark.
They said that, oh, that we've bared, commercial has bared all the weight of this rebuilding, when in reality, they have bared zero of the impacts. And Nicola from Massachusetts, give her credit, made a great comment, which is the rec industry has actually bared all the weight, because on top of all the reductions, they've gone from two fish at X, they're down to one now at this incredibly small spot, and out of no harvest targets now and no targeting, which obviously we do not support. Out of these two options, they've run out of changes to make to their regulations that will have significant impacts other than not being allowed to kill them anymore. And they do not want to see that come to the table because their only goal is to kill. So to hear that, oh, we're taking a dollar out of a pocket and then propose no targeting closure, which will shut down entire coastal economies, was ridiculous. John Clark should be ashamed for saying that. And he got put in his place rightly by Nicola.
Well, if you think he should be ashamed of saying that, I pulled the MRIP numbers last night for Delaware. And let me explain this. If this isn't the biggest shame in the world. So these are just harvest numbers. So this is what we're going to call type A plus B1 on MRIP. So what I did was all areas combined for the state of Delaware from 2010 to 2025 annual in numbers of fish. And I didn't start during the heyday. I started when they started declining. And I purposefully did that to do what very save the good commissioners. I wanted to be honest, because I think dishonesty is rampant. So why do it at the peak with that baseline and make it look worse than it is? Well, in 2010, total harvest A plus B1, 61,000 fish. 2011, 43,000. And, you know, it keeps bouncing around. 70,000 in 2023. 41,000 in 2015, and then all of a sudden pump the brakes. In 2024, now this has a wild, this is a PSE of 72.3. Thanks, Noah, for your awesome MRIP. But in 2024, with a 72.3% PSE, it was 1,200 fish, Cody. If you want to go where there's just the cautionary, you have to go all the way back to 2020. That just has a 38.2 PSE, 1,600 fish. Go back to 2018 with a 37 PSE, 4,100 fish. Okay. What fisheries manager, state director, would not be laying on the ground of the governor's desk begging for something? You know what Delaware does? They increase the allowable area for gill nets. During this same time, they increase the allowable area for gill nets. I don't know what to do with that. You shouldn't be the fisheries director of Delaware. How does this not come up in a conversation? And you want quota from North Carolina so your guys can net more fish. And you put a motion up yesterday. This is the best. That, again, in these horrific 7 hours technical committee, listening to every state person on the technical committee explain how unaccountable their commercial fishery is, the representative from Delaware asked for extra percentages if they did their tagging correctly, because that would reflect how much poaching is going on. And he said it, and it's on the record. This is our leadership. These people should not manage fisheries.
Imagine saying, like, hey, the speed limit on this highway is 70. If I actually got my driver's license, would you let me go 90? Like, hey, if I actually participate in the process and follow the rules, I could break the rules, correct? I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. And we're going to take a deeper dive into this with the blog and pull some quotes, because people need to be held accountable for what they said. But, you know, let's dive into the monster. Let's dive into no targeting. Why don't you tee up how no targeting and the removal of no targeting from draft addendum to how that was brought into play by Marty, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah. Okay. So let's do something positive here. Okay. And the positive thing is I am going to list the states. We don't tell y'all anything. We ask you to participate. We ask you to send emails. We educate you, let you come up with your own position. Okay. So thank you to everyone who either started with us from day one or picked up on us yesterday. Thank you all. And thank you for sending the emails, because, you know, Cody, we did move the needle. So look, I just want this perspective. You have to put your mind in this place. We were voting on what was going out to public comment. We were not voting on final action. Okay. Like where the rubber meets the road. So
today's votes were about what options you will get to talk about.
Yeah, this is what's going to be in the document for public comment. What we wanted and what we advocated, you know, through a lot of different channels, was to remove no targeting from the document. And I'm just going to tell the story. We can get into the reasons why. But if you look at the following jurisdictions, they deserve you to send an email and say thank you. And if you want, include the governor's email in there. You know, info@blah blah blah, whatever the governor's email is. I can't list them all for you. Why should you do this? Because the reality is these people stuck their neck out and they knew it was the right thing to do. And we can't be a group that just constantly beats up on people. So the states that supported the motion to amend to remove no targeting were Massachusetts, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, New Hampshire, and Maine. Now, that said, there is something going on in New York. That third seat, the legislative, you know, everyone has three seats at ASMFC. The elected official who held the ability to assign somebody as the legislative proxy, that third seat in New York, retired. And New York's got a lot of going on, and they haven't assigned it to somebody else yet. So their process, they only have two voting members now. Your fisheries director, Marty Gary, how many times have you heard me say this? He is a good man. I know Marty. I know how he raised his kids. I know how he feels about his grandchildren. He is the person that you want in New York leading you. He is the one who made the motion to remove no targeting. When he made that motion, he, and we'll have this quote in the next podcast, he asked the head of law enforcement committee to comment on it. Law enforcement said, it is completely unenforceable. Don't make us do this. Out of 27 options, it was the 27th, and people are fishing in the EEZ whenever the fish are there. That is not enforceable, and they've never given a ticket for targeting striped bass in the EEZ unless somebody was possessing a striped bass. New York, Marty Gary, tell him thank you. Connecticut, Matt Gaetz. Pennsylvania, Chris Kuhn. North Carolina, Chris Bat Savage. New Hampshire, all of them. Doug Grout, Dennis Abbott, Cherie Patterson just retired. They just hired a new fisheries director. Please send her one as well in Maine. And that's Megan Ware, who's the chairperson of the Striped Bass Management Board. Please tell them thank you for at least trying, because they need to know that we support them.
So the EEZ stuff, for people who don't understand why that's important, the immediate pushback from the evil empire of striped bass was that it doesn't matter that law enforcement can't enforce these laws. There were some really ridiculous statements we're going to have to pull along the lines of, we're not in the business of law enforcement. We don't do what they want. They do what we want. It's like, no, you quite literally, your profession in this seat is making laws to then tell law enforcement to go enforce them. So to say that you are not in the business of making effective laws is absolutely ridiculous. It's literally the job of this entire role.
I'll tell you what you're not in the business of: policy. That's what they're not in the business of. Unless, I mean, I know like Nicola in Massachusetts, her title has to do with policy, and she is a very capable individual. So Nicola, if you listen to this, or anyone at Mass DMF, I was not referring to you, but some of those people are 100% math nerds who are like, look at my model. And they have no business talking about policy. You get somebody like Dennis Abbott. He was in the New Hampshire legislature his entire career. I'll take Dennis's word for it if he wants to talk policy with me. Some of the people, the people who were saying that enforcement, you know, doesn't have that ability to, we tell them what to do. Those are the exact people that I'm talking about.
And then we hear like half of the comments in support of no targeting started their comments with, I know no targeting is unenforceable, but. So we hear all this pushback about arbitrary statistics, and how are you leaning in on the impact that is a guaranteed impact of no targeting? And then you tell me with full acknowledgement that the rule that you are proposing is unenforceable. And we heard someone say, oh, well, someone that used to sit on this board had this great rule. They call it the 80-10-10 rule. And that's 80% of people will follow rules, 10% won't know what's going on, and 10% will knowingly break the rules. That's the definition of arbitrary. That's an arbitrary statistic. It is based off of whim and personal concept and nothing to do with scientific fact. So you can't say, oh, we don't support anything above 50% because it's arbitrary. We don't care about non-targets, unenforceability. It's a guaranteed impact. And I can guarantee you so because of the old 80-10-10 rule. What are we talking about? How is there the most disappointing part about this entire process when it comes to ASMSC and striped bass, Tony, is that this has to play out and you have to sit back and watch these idiots babble and no one corrects them. And so I give it to any of these board members who speak up and actually say, well, actually, like you made a really good point when Marty jumped in. And he's like, oh, actually, you guys are all beefing on the data right now. I'm here. I've seen it in person. It was epic in this wave. And that catch data is reflected in this reports.
And boy, Marty could have took the easy way out and been like, yeah, that darn MRIP. But no, what does Marty do? He's a good man.
He actually stood up for honesty. And it's ridiculous when this is how when I don't like to boil it down, but we have just gotten to this point. It's plain and simple. It's the good guys and the bad guys. It's the evil empire and everyone else trying to do their thing. And the reality is anytime the good guys propose something, this is how it goes, Tony. Good guy X, I'd like to propose this thing that's better for striped bass, for better for conservation. Seconded by good guy Y. Okay. They get a minute. Would you like to explain why you're proposing it? Okay. Would you like to get a minute, explaining why you seconded it? So you get this good effort. You get some people with good, solid reasoning for this effort. Who hops on the mic next? Bing, bang, boom, boom, boom. It's normally three or four of them in a row and just a total blab show of nothing based in fact. It is just dance and dance and dance and dance around what's proposed to make sure that you protect your goal. And your goal is protect your own, and your own is just to kill as much as possible. And it's disgusting. And this is how these votes play out 24/7. And so to see stuff like, I know that no targeting isn't unenforceable, but, and then to go full circle, you come back to the EEZ and they say, well, I don't even know how it makes any sense because, you know, it's been illegal in the EEZ forever. And look at that. And you have law enforcement come back and say, yeah, it's been illegal forever. We have literally never been able to prove it in a court of law and give out a single ticket unless we find a bucket full of dead bass.
In the history of the fishery, which has never been allowed in the EEZ, well, haven't been allowed in the EEZ for decades, they've never given a ticket that didn't involve possession.
For people who can't understand that, imagine there is a road. And you say, man, this road over here is residential and we need to protect people. So I'm going to drop the speed limit. It's 50 everywhere else in this area. We're making it 25 in this area. There are families that live here. We got to protect these kids. And people go ripping through it. Some people listen to it and some people go ripping through it. And there's a mash of all different speeds over there. And the sheriffs come back to you and they say, man, that speed limit's been 25 over there for decades. I haven't been able to give out a single ticket for anyone going over 26.
Okay. If you're a recreational angler, there are environmental conditions in the bay where the no target enclosures make sense. And if you wonder why nobody fights against them in the bay, it's because the recreational fishermen who care one tiny bit about the fishery generally don't fish on the hottest days in the summer anyway. We just don't do it. That's kind of the culture of the people who care. But in the ocean, all you need is one interaction when you're fishing for bluefish and you catch a striper, where stuff could get real weird for you. We've talked about that ad nauseum. I'm going to talk about one other thing. It's not going to make a difference. We need real reductions right now. These no target enclosures are not going to make a difference. If you have a no harvest closure, the people who want to kill a striped bass, they're going to go kill something else. That makes a difference. No target enclosures? It's not going to make a difference. We've proven time and time again. You know, here's the problem with the science. the scientists have big egos. They all do. Most of them. They want to prove that they can solve this math problem. Our issue with that is that this is a multi-billion dollar industry and it's not a math problem. And the fish are in a lot of trouble. So you have to do real things. So here's what happened. But here's what happened. If you look on the document, that go to the meeting materials on the ASMFC website for the summer meeting, and you will find a document called ASMFC 2025 Summer Meeting Materials PDF. You will see on page 37, 36, whatever, you will see a chart. The three columns still on the right of the chart are no target, striped bass only, trips eliminated. The second column is no target, striped bass trips, switch targets. The third column is no harvest. Yesterday, that first column of no target, striped bass only, trips eliminated was removed. Which, I mean, it was egregious. But look, they can't count the fish in the water. They're not admitting to the FES. You're telling me that you can project how many fish are saved with a rule that's unenforceable? It's not going to work. Like the hubris, I mean, the pride involved in all of this. Look at me. I'm so smart. I can do a model. These are people's lives. These are people's lives. I don't trust your model. Your model sucks. You know what your model doesn't have? 10 years of the commercial fishery for striped bass getting away with bloody murder. We're going down in flames, folks. What's the toxic triad? Overharvest, underreport, blame it on the environment. Look up the Cannery Row fishery in San Diego. Look up the ground fishery in Massachusetts. It's the same shit. And now it's happening with striped bass. At some point, we're going to have no other choice but to take management away from these people. Because this fishery is too, it is too important. And here's the thing. I just want you all to think about this too. The last time the striped bass population crashed, we had bluefish to catch. A bajillion bluefish. We had weakfish. But all these other fish. It took zero skill to go out and catch a winter flounder or a summer flounder. Literally zero skill. I know because I had zero skill at the time and I could catch them. That's how I know. It was just, I mean, absurd. Beer in one hand, rod in the other, mud minnow and a strip of squid, laughing, playing music on max level in the boat, and just crushing summer flounder. Big ones. Without even trying. We have none of that anymore. What are you going to do? What are you going to fish for? Hope you got a big ass boat and you go catch tuna while they're around, because they ain't going to be around forever. What are you going to fish for?
So rounding out, you talked about that column being removed, and that was a little confusing off the jump for a lot of people. We got a lot of text messages, emails, calls, tweets.
It's the column on the left. No striped bass trips will take place. That's the one that was removed. The two columns on the right are still there.
So here's the simplest way for people who want to understand it. There were two different ways for no targeting to be in the new document, and then one for it to not be. And one of the ways, one of those columns was removed. And that was a column that might have been a little bit more palatable and a little bit easier for the evil parties that be to be able to sell. And now what is left in the document for no targeting is going to be a lot harder for them to sell. It is still not dead, and we still need to be vigilant in expressing our dissatisfaction with the fact that it even exists right now. But for people trying to understand it better, there's still no targeting in the draft addendum. And when that comes out to public, you will have to viciously rip it apart with your public comment to show managers that you do not want this. So no targeting, gets dinged up, doesn't completely disappear. Comms is still part of the reduction. The reduction's going to be 12%. And there's a few other votes, Tony, but maybe we just round this out with a general look at commercial tagging, which became a little bit of a dilemma down the end.
So look, there's a chain of custody issue. If you don't tag the fish at point of harvest, there's about a million things that can happen from when you harvested that fish to when it hits the dealer or the consumer. Talk to people who loggers. Talk to anyone who benefits from a public resource by harvesting that public resource and selling it. Talk to any of them. Ask them the flaming hoops that they have to jump through with the government to be able to make a living. I don't think this is too much to ask. I really don't. There is a well-documented, prominent history of cheating. I've said this before on this podcast. My degree is in economics. I had an economics professor who was actually a retired New York City detective. And these were back in the days when you would actually have a couple of beers with your professor after a tough exam. And I was like, you have to tell me what the perfect crime is without hesitation, without blinking. From his experience in New York, he said, hijack an 18-wheeler full of frozen seafood. This is before I got into this. I was a kid. And I said, what? And he goes, oh, yeah, it's worth a fortune. He goes, and on every corner is a restaurant that would be more than happy to buy it. And the second that somebody eats it, the second that it's filleted, nobody knows where it came from. He goes, you give the driver of the truck some bucks so he doesn't tell on you. You hop in the truck and you go make a fortune. It's completely untraceable. He's like, and then even if you get caught, the judge is just going to look at you and be like, he had a fish? Probation before judgment. So look, they need to change this. And to some states' credit, they're already working on this. Kudos to them. They take the fishery seriously. Other states, 18-wheeler through the loophole. I want to bring up one other thing because I know people are concerned about it. I see this online, whatever, the few times that I'm actually on social media. So everyone is, you know, talking about Maryland wanting to kind of shuffle the deck chairs on the Titanic, which I totally think this is. Now, look, y'all, I can't walk near the water during really the only time a year that I have a decent sized fish that I could catch. I'm not buying this Maryland thing, and I'll tell you why. Much like the no targeting closures, they have to make assumptions. And there's an assumption that is being made on all these numbers that you will see in this document that there is no increase in effort. And it pains me that they did it this way, because if they had just done it honestly, maybe I could take my son before he goes off to college out and catch a couple of more big stripers, and he could have those memories with his dad. I can't support this because it's making the assumption that there's no increase in effort. Look, having the ban for the last 5-6 years, however long it's been, our spawning tributaries are closed no matter what. They're closed no matter what, and y'all need to understand that. We're just talking about the main stem of the bay. Having this closure, what's that done for spawning? Absolutely nothing. Nothing. Okay? So look, everyone that's like, oh, drop their eggs if you can. There's no science that supports this. They went over that in the meeting. No science on striped bass that says that they will not spawn if you catch and release them. And I spent 2 decades on the flats. 2 decades. 96, 2006, 2016. 17 years on the flats. We had some pretty darn good spawns then. And there were hundreds of boats on the flats. Hundreds. It looked like a sandbar in South Carolina on a weekend. So it's that's not the problem with spawn. So get that out of your head too. Okay. However, all that effort and money and time spent conjuring up these numbers that say that there's not an increase in effort, how can we support that? Because it's dishonest. Now, look, there's a 10%. Here are the upsides to it. There's a 10% conservation buffer. If it gets accepted, there's a 10% conservation buffer that can be applied. That's a positive thing. The other positive thing is it will extend the closure in the summer for a full month. That, to me, is a good trade-off.
It is worth noting that in this specific reference point, 10% is considered significant when it comes to conservation, but it's insignificant at scale.
Right. Now it's significant.
Hey, it's only 10%. That's basically nothing. Leave us out of it. All right. We'll give you 10% conservation. That's a massive cushion.
If y'all are listening to this, this is one of these things where, and this isn't because I live here and I want to fish in April. This is one of those things, if you want to send an email to info@saltwaterguidesassociation.org and tell us your thoughts, we will read every email on the Maryland closure. We'll read every email, because the thing is, there are guides in Maryland who would benefit from this, and they're good guides who treat the fish correctly and care for the fish and are going to play by the rules. So that's another tough spot for me to be in. But if you have any opinion on the Maryland closure, I don't believe Maryland's numbers. I do know that catching and releasing these fish in April doesn't do anything to impact the spawn, because the pressure was way bigger in the past. And so the only other negative thing about this proposal that we haven't mentioned is it opens up the harvest season on May 1st instead of May 15th. That's negative. So I'm being totally transparent. I think I know where I stand on it. The negatives are it opens harvest season up 15 days earlier. They're basing it on a false assumption that effort won't increase. And we're giving them a lot of wiggle room, and Maryland is not to be trusted. But if the genesis of this is that there is a tiny guide community here, and when I mean tiny, a large majority of the guides who were guiding 10, 15 years ago are no longer guiding. There are some that are trying their best, and kudos to them. So if you have an opinion on it, just send it to info@saltwaterguidesassociation.org. Right now, the best I can say is I'm agnostic on it. The reality is I don't trust Maryland as far as I can throw them, even though I'd like to throw them a really long way. And the whole basis of this model is bullshit, just like a lot of the models that we deal with. It's just complete and utter bullshit. And you're like, how do I solve a math problem? Not how do I bring this multi-billion dollar resource back?
Well, they got into commercial tagging at the end, and we don't have to dive too deep into this now, but basically just asking for accountability throughout the entire commercial process. And some of that means, hey, you can't just bring in a fish and throw it in your cooler and then decide if you're going to tag it and what you're going to do with it, what that fish's fate is in the future. And if some people find other fates that are not within the bounds of that process, how wild and unexpected. But when it comes to commercial tagging, our asks have been along the lines of, you know, a streamlined process.
Here's hope, right? There's a state, I'm not going to say who, I don't know if it's public knowledge, but they are thinking about converting their tags to have a barcode. So it's not just a number, but I mean, think about how cool that would be to be able to track that.
I mean, it's 2025, man. I mean, we've had the technology to do that since they could accomplish that in 2017, right? So like, I mean, we literally have computers that can solve your entire life every day now from AI for like $9.99 a month. So
yeah, and we have it in our pocket. It's called our phone. You can scan the bar. You put a freaking QR code on it. Like,
So they were asked for COM tagging at point of harvest. And then immediately the debates became, what does it really mean to be at point of harvest? And what if it's rough out and the safety of our commercial guys? And it's like, dude, so the water is so rough that you can be on the boat hauling in a massive net that has thousands of dead stripers in it and hung hooks. And if it's hook and line, you know, you're re-rigging, you're retying, you're operating the boat, but you don't have enough time to punch a tag at a fish. Oh, we just let us get back to the docks first, and then we'll tag them at the docks. Oh, just let us get, it's always just push the limits.
If you listen to it, it's like, oh, so they're focusing on this too much, so this must be one of their loopholes.
Right.
You don't have to be my professor, who was an ex-New York City detective, to be like, whoa, okay. I mean, it's like your kid looking at you with chocolate all over his face. You're like, did you eat the chocolate? And they're like, no, I didn't eat the chocolate.
Yeah, well, so son, you're just going to ask me, you know, every time you go in the hamper, will you just ask me? I know you're not going for chocolate, but when you go for other stuff, just ask me to go in the hamper. And the kid being like, what? I have to ask? I have to ask every time? Why would I? Same thing here. Hey, man, when you pull them over and you realize it's a legal size and that thing's, you know, destined for wherever the hell, whatever market it's destined to, if it's legally tagged and purchased, slap a tag on it the moment it dies. Why is flexibility a four-letter word here? Because every fish that comes in, if you don't have to tag it right away, is an option to maybe go out if a bigger one can come in. And they want more dollar per pound, and they want more poundage.
Especially when they're saying it's 4 pounds when it's 10. That's the home run, right? I mean, it's like, goodness.
I mean, we're seeing countless, I get countless different screenshots from people that are in different fishing groups all up and down the coast that share stuff with me. Hey, I'm out at the dock right now. Here's my massive Yeti full of striped bass. Shoot me a text. Give me a DM. Send me an email if you want to buy them. So this is the type of activity that is going on. There's no tags in any of these photos, and these are supposedly commercial guys. This needs to be reined in. And the one thing that a lot of people might not understand is the reason why commercial, a lot of times as a sector, gets a little bit of slack is from the science and data perspective, quote unquote, well, they give us the most profound and rock solid data because every fish is accounted for and it's tagged and it comes in and we have point of sale. We know how many fish are caught, and wreck is a little bit more of an estimate. And the reality is the data, go look at our latest blog about Maryland commercial. That's not true. And they've been given the pass as though they are good steward. It's essentially a teacher letting a kid come in a little bit late to class because he's a star pupil. And in reality, that kid's like dealing crack out of the back of the classroom. We're giving a pass to someone that is doing bad things in this entire shared resource. This is one resource.
The worst outcome of this is that the numbers are bad and they're going into the stock assessment. And let's talk real quick. 2.8% commercial discards because there's no small fish. You see everything's broken. Yeah, how quickly you could 2-3x the actual catch versus the quota, like snapping your fingers, blink of an eye. And then this goes again. Let's repeat it after me. Over harvest, under report, blame it on the environment. You don't know the history of fisheries around the world if you don't know that. And we're going to be like, what happened? Oh my gosh, the water quality and, you know, climate change in the bay. Goodness gracious.
Here's my closing point, my theory that I'd like people to think about, which is like, what is the role of these managers? What is their position intended to do? Is intended to make sure that a resource is equitably accessible when shared over such a large expanse, that people have opportunity to participate in it, that people are educated on it. But more so than any of that, it is not to ensure that a select few can get the highest per dollar effort and the most out of every annual year that they can extort. It is about the long-term utilization of this resource. that benefits everyone. When they kill too many fish, they hurt everyone. When we save too many fish, quote unquote, we save ourselves and them. It is absolutely so toxic of a dynamic. And we have looked within our own bounds, ASGA, we and the recreational community at large, we have looked within our own house and tidied up our own house for years. This is how we can be better. This is the things we can educate on. These are the things we can mandate. These are the regulations. These are the reductions that we can take. And silly little small commercial has hidden in the shadows saying, we're just nothing. Leave us out of this. And they're a massive part of it. They've done nothing to conserve it. And now the train, it's an action movie, and the train has a couple segments hanging off the cliff, and the caboose is slowly riding to the edge of the cliff. And it's because of what has been allowed to happen for years. And when we come to the big M word that we have not thrown around very much in recent years, when it comes to moratorium conversation, the harvest moratorium, is because you guys killed too many for too long, and you could have just killed a little bit less, but you couldn't. You had to take every penny for years and years and years. And now soon it's going to be shut down for everyone because you did this, plain and simple.
Cody, I think you and I have done an incredible job of being professional when I was ready to punch a hole in my wall yesterday. The one thing that we have left out on this is NOAA and National Marine Fisheries Service role in that vote that ultimately left one aspect of no targeting in. And I cannot do that quickly, talk about that, but we'll save that for the next long podcast that we're probably going to do over the weekend. And this would be my message to them. You have done nothing for our fisheries in so long, I can't remember. The previous administration did nothing. One of the greatest disappointments of my fisheries career working in this stuff. Nothing. Zero. Actually, you did bad stuff. I don't even know what to say. So here's the deal. You're going to own that. I told you that privately that you would own it right before the meeting, and you're going to own it. And we're going to talk a lot about the failures of NOAA, FES, fisheries going down the tubes. We're going to cover a lot of it. So you're not getting off scot-free with this either. I would like to leave on a positive note, and we're going to go through the list again. Pennsylvania, Maine, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Mardi Gras in New York. Please thank them because they stuck their neck out, and what they did was very brave, trying to get people to focus on something that could make a difference and is quantifiable with seasonal harvest closures, which pretty much every other fishery in the goddamn world has. So we're going to spend a long time dumping on the people that deserve it. These people deserve a thank you. And I'm begging you.
For people who are confused because, man, they're just mad that no targeting still could be in there. Or when it comes to a vote, I can't believe the vote didn't go the way that we would have pushed for. And look at the unanimous public comments and da-da-da-da-da. The reality is when Tony talks about thanking the people who are standing up for these things, if those people didn't exist, it would be that much worse. What would the options be if we didn't have some heroes trying to stand up and at least do the right thing, especially in the face of adversity in this board? You know, you talk about 0, 12, and 18, and I'm glad they tried for 18, but 18, you know, got the cut. Well, you'd be looking at 0 as an option, and you'd be looking at commercial not being involved in conservation yet again for another year. And these are the type of things that would be included, and you'd have these massive sweeping no target enclosures, multiple different options still in the document. There are good people trying to fight for good things that protect everyone. And if you're upset with how it currently plays out, just think it would be that much worse, because they're set up in a system that is set up to fail when it comes to conservation because of the way the votes are distributed and the fact that small entities around the Bay and the Bay as a whole have these massive voting bloc that completely competes with entire states and the entire New England coast that has a completely different value of the resource.
Yeah, I mean, Cody, do the math real quick. Theoretically, the Potomac River has three votes. Imagine if the Kennebec River had three votes, because Maryland owns the water and they get a vote. PRFC is another vote, and the District of Columbia. Imagine if, like, Big Earl's bait shop on the Kennebec River was like, this is my 2 miles of the Kennebec River and I get one vote. So that was set up when the Striped Bass Management Board was set up, and that was incorrect. It has an outsized impact. So this Maryland, PRFC, DC, Virginia, so that little bit of land right there has the same voting power as Maine to Rhode Island. I want you to think about that. That's when we are starting with the deck stacked against us around every corner. And if you could tell me why PRFC and DC have a vote on if there should be no targeting closures in the ocean, I would love to hear it. I'd love to hear one shred of logic that substantiates that. And I mean, really, honestly, Maryland owns the water and the Potomac to mean low tide on the Virginia side. I don't really think PRFC or PRFC or DC should have a vote at ASMFC. Only reason why they have a vote is because it was set up the wrong way. If you keep doing the same stuff over and over again without changing, you know, you keep running headfirst into a brick wall. When are you going to, like, turn your head and be like, holy mackerel, there's a door right there. That hurt a lot less if we just opened the door. Like, we're idiots. Complete and utter idiots. There's no reason why the Bay should have more than two votes. I don't know. Somebody explain it to me. I need to know. So, all that said, this was supposed to be 25 minutes. We're over an hour because that's what happens when we get on this. We're going to do a much deeper dive. We're going to do a blog, another podcast, all this stuff. We heard y'all. We heard what you said. Hey, we want to know what happened at the Striper meeting. I will say this. The Menhaden meeting was this morning. If you think the Striped Bass Management Board is bad, take heart. The Menhaden Board might be a couple of notches below. I listened to the hour of the Menhaden Board, and this is the rundown I can give you. Maryland is mad at Virginia for killing all the Menhaden before they get into Maryland, and Maryland can kill them. I did not hear anything about the ecosystem. One person said one thing about ospreys. One, like, in the whole hour. All it was our watermen are not catching Menhaden. They're not talking about changing the quota. They're talking about having different seasons so some Menhaden can get past the wall of purse seines and swim into pound nets here. This has nothing to do with conservation. It's a joke. The whole thing is a joke. One jurisdiction is mad at another jurisdiction because they're killing the fish before they can. something needs to change.